Hello and welcome to another edition of Coffee Talk. My name is Trevor Huth. Of course, I am joined as always. Well, I guess not always. He missed a week, but we're not going to hold it against him. Nate the Great Kosher. Nate, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Trying to stay dry. You know, in the Midwest, we like to talk about the weather a lot, and it's been raining a lot, so that's on my mind.
Yes, it has. It's been raining a lot where I'm at also, and 2 weeks, I think, is the buffer, so I can no longer mention that you missed a week. I do, of course, want to thank Jake Crumpler one more time for filling in, but it has been raining a lot, and that's no fun.
No, it's not, and it always dampens baseball season, obviously, with outdoor games, but...
Pun intended or what?
Yes. Pun intended.
All right. Good. Pun intended. So before we jump into anything that was already planned, I'm putting word out to our wonderful listeners here at Coffee Talk. I saw something that I wanted to talk about on our podcast, and I looked at it, and before I could send it, Twitter did that thing where it updates and disappears whatever you were looking at, and I lost it forever.
Yes.
And I can't find it anymore, and I'm starting to think that I dreamed it. But what happened in this clip was that a pitcher, can't remember the pitcher's name, attempted a pickoff move to first base. Ellie De La Cruz was the runner. Ellie dives back in. First baseman throws the ball back to the pitcher. And really quick, pitcher gets it, throws it right back to first base. Only counts as one disengagement from the rubber. And that was kind of the whole point of the video, I think, because everybody was counting like, that's only one, right? He threw it twice, but it was only one disengagement. This clip has fallen off the face of the planet. I cannot find it. If you search Ellie and pickoff, all you see is when one of the Rogers twins picked off Ellie last year. So, or earlier this year, whenever. Sure. But it was not the clip I'm looking for because he picked him off at second base. So I don't know if this clip exists. I don't know if I dreamed it. I don't know if I'm making it up. But I thought it was a really interesting strategy to get the ball back and do another quick throw to first, because then you kind of get two throws with limited disengagements from the rubber. Nate, do you have any thoughts about that as a potential strategy or something we might see more of?
Yeah, that's interesting. Hopefully someone has seen this and can fill us in. But it seems like maybe a loophole that could be exploited, or at least, you know, kind of an exception that pitchers might try. And well, with De La Cruz, we were just saying before we started, he's been on just a tear. I think one game he stole three bases in just one single game. So pitchers are going to have to do whatever they want, whatever they can do. Also, this probably would become more and more of a strategy ever since they put in all the rules last season. And of course, steals went way up. I haven't tracked, you know, that we talked about that a lot last season, or baseball fans. I haven't seen the numbers this year, I don't think, on steals, if it's going up or the same as last year. But you think if this was not just a dream, Trevor, in your head, you think maybe, yes, this would be occurring more often.
If this was a dream in my head, it's not a bad idea. I feel like someone should hire me. It definitely was. I vividly remember this as a real thing that happened. So if you find the clip, or you know the clip I'm talking about, tag Coffee Talk PL, tag Nathaniel Kosher, tag Huth Trevor on Twitter, tag something, please, and let us know, please. Because I really want to know if I'm going insane or not. I mean, I probably am. And that's probably not why, but I would really like to know if I'm making this up or not, because I remember it so vividly and I cannot find any trace of it. So with that in mind, let's move on to what we have planned. And the first thing is kind of exciting. We've talked a few times, Nate, about how you and I are in the same relegation league.
Yes.
For pitcherless staff. And we are at the bottom tier of the league. I don't know if you played last year. This is my first year playing in it in this go round. I tried a few years back and I didn't make it out of relegation, but this is my first year in it.
Yep.
And is this yours as well?
I was in, like, there was some community fun leagues I was in last season, but I think this is my first like official pitcher list staff league.
Yeah. I remember the community fun leagues. A few years back, one of the wonderful longtime pitcher list members, King Hippo and I were matched up in a blind draft, and we hated how each other drafted. So that was a lot of fun. And you know what? I will publicly admit right now, I was wrong the whole time. The whole time. I was incorrect. And I was the staff member. But I was completely wrong. King Hippo drafted great. Like, I don't know what I was thinking, but, you know, we're not all at our best all the time. So great job, King Hippo. Yeah, exactly. Retrospect, my bad. I drafted poorly. I probably lost at that league. Anyway, you and I played each other this week.
We did.
And here's where I publicly admit that I have been bad at checking all of my fantasy rosters. Like, things got busy and I got out of the habit and I need to get myself back into it. I probably haven't looked at any of my rosters in a week and a half. So how did we do?
Yes. So I didn't realize it until later in the week. Actually, I think maybe the weekend. I was like, oh, I'm playing Trevor this week. So your pitching staff delivered the victory, because going into Sunday, I checked, you were up 6-4. So 10 categories, still the chance. I was thinking, well, I can swing it on Sunday. Maybe if my pitchers come through, because I had some guys starting, I only had 2 wins. I think you had 3 wins. Right. And so I thought, okay, well, maybe I can move ahead. However, you finished with 4 wins, 55 strikeouts, and here's the kicker, a 0.57 ERA and a 0.70 whip. So that is what delivered you to victory. At one point, you had like zeros. So you just had a great week pitching. And yeah,
I had to because I have Max Meyer not available in my starting lineup. I have Zach Gelof and Francisco Alvarez were both on the IL in my starting lineup. Maybe it's been longer than a week and a half and I'm just making it seem shorter, but yikes for me.
Yeah, you're right. Your pitching staff is pretty shallow, but whoever started last week did great. And that moves you up to fifth place in our league, and I'm sixth.
All right. I'm still in shouting distance. Let's go.
Right. So we're right in the middle.
Pitching staff in question. I have Yamamoto, Clay Holmes, Tarek Skubal, Logan Gilbert, Hunter Brown, Kyle Harrison, Alex Lang, Kent Maeda, and as aforementioned, Max Meyer. It's the whole pitching staff. I have no bench spots. Those are all starting. I have no control over anything. I'm just leaving them in.
Oh, Kent Maeda, that is who we were joking around, I think, early in the season. You were going to trade him to me.
Yeah, and he's been bad. And he actually had a good outing.
He did.
See, all you have to do is forget he's in your rotation and wait it out.
So he had 5 innings, 5 strikeouts, no earned runs, and a 0.60 whip. So there you go.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Kenta Maeda. Of course, a tiger of mine holding it down. I will get back to checking the rosters again. I hate being bad at that. It just is who I am as a person as of right now, but that's okay. So that's a good update on the PL League. Now, I don't know if we have any crossover listeners. I subbed in on Fantasy Feud, which is hosted by Sarah and Shelly. They do an awesome job. Shelly wasn't there. They needed somebody. I hopped in. And we talked about Jordan Walker. And I defended Jordan Walker. And I defended why we should continue to roster Jordan Walker. Mm-hmm. The day it released, the podcast itself released, which was the day after we recorded it, Jordan Walker gets sent down to AAA. So, I mean, the timing seems just about right, if you ask me. I'm still a Jordan Walker believer. I have my reasons. He was sent down. Jackson Holliday was sent down. Does any of this worry you?
So I'll start with Jordan Walker. Speaking of other pitcher list activities, I last week had my risers, deep league risers and fallers article, and I talked about Jordan Walker. And so in that column, we try to identify people who are, as it said, risers and fallers, but that doesn't mean if they're a faller every time that's bad, so to speak. So I had Jordan Walker as a faller, but I gave the advice to go make a move for him because you could probably get him for cheap because of his struggles. So Yeah, I was basically defending Walker as well, saying, well, last year he got sent down, came back, finished strong. The tools are there. The pedigree's there. I still am a Jordan Walker believer also. If you look at what he had, yeah, he finished last season. I had the lineup, 16 home runs, 51 RBI in 117 games and 7 stolen bases. I said, which would suggest he could reach 25, 15-ish season if he played, you know, if he gets locked in and plays the whole year. I mean, he has been bad, but I was saying I think he'll rebound. That was, I think, before he was sent down also.
Then yeah, he was well, sent down. That, so. I think that surprised a lot of people because at some point you just got to let him have his run.
Right.
But, you know, I'm with you. I mean, for one, he's 22, not even 22 yet. He's young. And he's really, really young. That's the thing. And for him to, you know, you want to see him figure it out quickly, but realize that he's 21 right now. Okay, so he's not even 22 yet. This is age 22 season. He'll turn it soon, but he's 21 right now.
Okay.
And that means something, right? I mean, 21 is very young to be a Major League Baseball player.
It is.
I know we have a small sample, but he's been, just in terms of his average EV, he's been hitting the ball a little hard, right? It's up a couple of miles an hour, nothing crazy, but that's in a small sample size compared to last year. The problem is he's just beating the ball into the ground. He is hitting so many ground balls, lots of ground balls, too many ground balls. So if he can figure out how to lift the ball a little bit, he might have more success, whatever the case is. But him being sent down is not an indication that he's a bad hitter or that the Cardinals have given up on him. I think that he's young, and I think he's shown enough to where this is more just they want him to work on something, and it's hard to do that against Major League Baseball pitching. And also, they need to win. The Cardinals are trying to win baseball games, and right now Jordan Walker's not helping them do that. It doesn't mean he won't forever. He might figure it out very quickly in AAA, and he might come back up. But there's got to be some change made. He needs to lift the ball more. He needs to do something. You mentioned the talent is there. The hitting talent is absolutely there. He just needs to take that next step and make that talent work for him at the major league level.
Yes, 100%. I'm with you. I think definitely Dynasty League, he's still on your roster. Redraft League, I think you still could send a buy low offer and see what happens. I'm not as worried about him. Jackson Holliday, let's talk about him now. I was surprised he did so poorly. That worries me a bit if you look at the historic. Like, there was a few stats that popped up, and I saw, like, you know, only two other people have struck out this many times in the first whatever plate appearances. I don't have those stats, but I read a few things on Twitter. Obviously, also super young, super talented. I didn't think he'd get sent back down, though. I thought when he was up for good. So that surprised me.
Yeah, I think 18 strikeouts and 36 plate appearances. That is half for those of us who are bad at math. I'm talking to myself mostly, but that's half, right?
So I'm not great at it either. So 50%, we can do that.
So not great. And I think that instead of having him up and just losing confidence by the day, I think it's probably smart for the Orioles to have sent him down. Now, am I going to base all of my Jackson Holliday thoughts into his first 36 plate appearances as a Major League Baseball player? No.
Right.
Don't know. I don't know if this has to be said. Major League Baseball is very hard. I've never tried it, but I've seen it, and it looks really hard. And Jackson Holliday, as talented as he is, Jordan Walker, as talented as he is, sometimes it just takes a minute. And especially when you think about a guy like Jackson Holliday, famous, massive expectations, like some of the highest expectations of anybody who's come into the league lately. You know, that's a lot. That's really hard to come up and just perform with. Maybe him doing poorly might take some of the shine off. And when he comes back off, there might be a little bit less expectation. He can just play baseball. You know, it seemed like in his – anytime I would see clips – again, I'm not going to pretend I sat down and watched a bunch of Jackson Holiday tape from the big leagues. I haven't. But anytime I see clips and stuff like that, it seems like he's just pressing. And when someone is pressing like that, it can be really hard for them to perform. Especially with weight of expectations, especially with everything else that is going on, that can make it really hard for Jackson Holiday to actually come up and perform. Now, I'm not excusing his performance by any means because, you know, he is baseball's top prospect, and baseball's top prospect should come up, and baseball's top prospect should do well. But that doesn't necessarily mean that's going to happen. And when it comes to trying to understand that expectation, or trying to gauge, rather, that expectation in terms of fantasy baseball, it can be really, really hard to figure out how that will affect a player. And I think Jackson Holiday just maybe wasn't ready. Maybe the lights were too bright. Maybe he just needed to come up and see it, and now he can use his robo brain to figure out the rest of it. Because, I mean, he figured out everything else so quickly. And so I'm not worried about Jackson Holiday even a little bit. Talent plays, and I think more than anything else, that's what I'm banking on with Jackson Holiday. So I wouldn't go selling him. I wouldn't go worrying about Jackson Holiday because he's going to get another chance this year. At least he should get another chance this year. And when he does, I got to believe he's going to be much more prepared. And if he's much more prepared, then the results should be a lot higher. And then we all get the Jackson Holiday that we thought we were going to get the first time. And that right there is kind of what we're looking for. So with Jackson Holiday again, I mean, the stats aren't great. There's cause for worry in the stats. I get that. But he's too talented, and I think maybe the first go-round just wasn't the right go-round for him, and another one should be coming. So, Nate, bad news about the other side of the baseball. We talked about Jackson Holiday and Jordan Walker and their struggles, but on the other side, we're having more injuries, and injuries seem to be a constant thing when it comes to starting pitching this year.
Yeah, it has been really crazy. A couple of other big names since our last episode that have now been hurt. Jesus Luzardo on the Marlins. He was diagnosed with a mild left flexor muscle strain. Seems pretty minor. He missed one of his scheduled starts, which was Friday, went on the 15-day IL. But he played catch already tonight, Monday. He was warming up and playing catch. So I think he'll be okay. He's off to a rough start. I believe I have him on one of my fantasy teams. The other guy, Zach Gallen, the Diamondbacks ace, luckily not an arm or shoulder or anything with his arms, a hamstring strain. So, you know, pretty common. Both of these, I think, are something they'll bounce back from. But Gallen is interesting because he had a really huge workload last season, career high in innings, pitched, you know, through the World Series. And so I know the Diamondbacks were taking it easy with him in the offseason and trying to get him more rest than typical. So I would think it could just be a fatigue issue, but no major injuries, just a couple of names you may have on your squads.
Yeah, and, you know, we are actually starting to see some of the spring training injuries make their way back. Like Kyle Bradish is going to be coming back this week, if that hasn't already happened by the time you're listening to this. I know Gavin Williams was on his way back. He had he got delayed by what the Guardians are hoping is going to be a week. But with the pitchers going out, which is super unfortunate, there are also some pitchers coming back. And I'll tell you what, this leads into really quick, just a conversation we had on Fantasy Feud. there's a lot of wins right now. They're going to middle relievers.
Hmm. Yes.
Like pitcher wins, which I know is everybody's right. favorite stat and all, but it matters for fantasy baseball. And a lot of those aren't actually going to these starters. And you got to wonder if that is happening because all these top-notch starters are getting injured, or maybe as a reaction to it, so they don't hurt more starters on accident.
Interesting. Yeah, I noticed a couple of relievers picking up wins, but I didn't think of it in the wider spectrum. But that's interesting. Yeah, is it because all of the solid pitches are out, and so they're trying to kind of piecemeal it together? Or maybe that's the way things are moving. But speaking of wins as a category, I like not having wins. Now, I prefer no wins in fantasy leagues, because that's so frustrating when, you know, it's looking like you're going to be golden, and then someone swoops in, you know, pitches an inning and gets the win.
You're saying it's frustrating when you draft Mets era Jacob deGrom and he throws for like a sub-zero ERA and can't get a win?
There you go. That's a perfect example. Yeah. Yes. He gives up two earned runs all season, but gets one run of support.
Yeah. Mets era Jacob deGrom, one of the like most wild things you'll ever see. Oh my gosh. With that being said, Nate, we're going to take a quick break here on Coffee Talk. We will have more coming up. We got more players that we're going to talk about. Can't wait to get to it. We will be back. Well, you are listening to Coffee Talk on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. And welcome back to Coffee Talk on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. My name is Trevor Huth. The other voice you're going to hear, well, that's Nate Kosher. We are talking about, well, baseball. Nate, we've had a lot of good discussion here on some guys who were playing pretty well, some guys who got demoted, maybe as a surprise. And we're going to jump more into our fantasy French press. That's very hard to say, actually. That's why I struggled there. Fantasy French press. So I hope you like some fancy coffee. Slade Ciccone, pitcher for the Diamondbacks, your team, former first round pick. Or no, not first round. He was right after the first round. He was like two picks after the first round ended, if I'm not mistaken. Well, he's been up with the Diamondbacks, and he's been pitching pretty well this year.
Yeah, I think I briefly mentioned him last week when we were looking at the 2020 draft, when we were going through all the picks. And he got his first win, first start, first win. Sometimes I don't put a lot of weight into that because you think, well, the hitters have never seen him before. They might not know who it is. They can kind of catch him off guard. But then over the weekend, second straight quality start, I actually watched the game, and he was great. He went six innings, eight strikeouts, one walk, three hits, one earned run. Actually, speaking of, I think they lost the game, and he actually got the loss, I think. But he looked really good. His four-seamer is typically like 94, 95. He was using that a lot in the top of the zone. And then his other two pitches, a slider and changeup, which was interesting. He's using the slider to right-handers, changeup more to left-handed batters, to pretty good success. And it was actually a pitcher's duel against the Mariners. Kirby was lights out. I think he had like 12 strikeouts, but hitters could not do anything. And yeah, Slade was looking good. And as I mentioned, Zach Gallen was hurt, but they've had trouble fortifying the fifth starter. So if he keeps pitching well, I think he could jump into that slot.
Yeah, I was just looking up my old scouting report on Slade Ciccone. I wrote in 2022. And I mentioned that he had all the pieces there to be a solid starter. But it's just, you know, I didn't know if he was going to get there. I think command was a question that I had. I also wondered, where is the third pitch? Because right now, or when I was scouting him and looking up some things this year, his fastball was average is how I graded. I don't know if it's taken a jump or not, because I had mentioned something about velocity. But I think his fastball is still about average. I was never in love with the fastball.
Yeah, I think
that's, I really like the slider. I thought the slider was above average. Baseball America has it plus on his most recent scouting report. So the slider's pretty good. But the question is, where do you go from there? It's nice that you mentioned the changeup, because when you're looking at righties, And when I'm, I'll just speak from my personal experience scouting. I can't speak to like the world of scouting, obviously, but when I'm looking at a pitcher and I'm looking at a righty, the fastball obviously is something you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at their off-speed pitches. What do they have that's going to get out same-handed hitters? What do they have that's going to get out opposite-handed hitters? And the question that I had with Ciccone is, where's that pitch that you can trust to get out lefties? That could be like, and when you think about it traditionally, breaking pitch, slider, curveball, that's for same-handed hitters. Change-ups generally for opposite-handed hitters. So Ciccone being a righty, that'd be change-up for lefties. That doesn't have to be the case. If you have a really good breaking pitch and you can make it work and you can locate it, you can set it up, all that stuff, then fine. Right? That works for me. But you have to show that you can consistently get out both handed hitters. And my question is, if he's going to start long term, where's that pitch? So if he's developed that changeup and he has it working and it's an out pitch against lefties, that's going to go a long way in terms of him solidifying himself as that rotation arm. And obviously, I mean, he's doing really, really well right now. 12 innings this year, 2.25 ERA, striking out just over 8 per 9. I mean, he's doing really well since being called up, especially because last year he didn't do that great in his cup of coffee last year.
Right.
So yes. It's really good to see him doing better. And there are lots of pitchers that I watch and I go, okay, where's that out pitch against opposite handed hitters? The one I remember most vividly is Joey Estes with the Oakland Athletics. I'm sitting there watching him live and it looks pretty good. Fastball, slider, but where's that other pitch? And for Ciccone, it appears that changeup is what has stepped mm-hmm. up to be that out pitch against lefties.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he has the deepest pitch mix. Like you said, looking at his player page on pitcherlist.com, he uses four seamer almost half of the time, slider a third of the time, and then change up like 20% of the time. So I think that is the third pitch, and he was working, you know, was working well the other night. He's been doing great. Like you said, I think I wouldn't rush out to add him everywhere. I think it's someone we'd maybe want to see a little bit more of, but I was actually surprised how good he looked the other night when I watched. So as we said, pitchers are at a scarcity, and if you can get quality starts, even let's say you picked him up, then he gave you a quality start that could have gave you a win last week in your fantasy league. So yeah, he was looking good.
Yeah, for sure. So I want to bring up another guy who's been playing pretty well lately. He is the 20th ranked prospect according to Baseball America. By the way, I use Baseball America as my primary. I mean, I look at all the rankings, but I know we do MLB Pipeline when we break down the top 100. When I Sure. look specifically at organizations, I think I use Baseball America. So he's ranked 20th for his team on Baseball America. And Nate, I'm kind of throwing you a curveball here because I gave you no time to prepare, but Wensiel Perez was called up by the Tigers. And I'll be honest, I am shocked at how well he's doing. In his time since getting called up, he has 35 at-bats, hitting .286, and he got his first major league home run just the other day. It's awesome to see. I mean, he is consistently climbing up the batting order. He's clawing his way up, and he's proving, hey, we need a spot. I'm that guy. I got that spot. It's mine. So very interesting stat line to start. Very small sample size, and he was a guy who's, I mean – if you want my honest evaluation, I evaluated him as a below average hit tool and power, maybe average hit tool at best, but I was not super high on his ability to hit the ball. But he is at the major league level. So are you buying in, or are you looking at these scouting reports and being like, you know, maybe I hold off still a little bit on Wensiel Perez?
So what I was going to ask you about, he is just looking him up here a little bit more, outfielder. So have they DH'd him at all, or he's just played in the outfield, you know? I was wondering about the defensive repertoire. I guess that was my question, but
yeah, so he he came up as an infielder, so he can play just about anywhere on the dirt, in terms of what he's done in the past. I mean, he was originally brought in to play middle infield. He was second base, shortstop. He's played third base. He didn't start playing outfield at all until last year, really. So he has not been a DH at the major league level yet. He has played center field and right field.
So a guy who has a lot of potential eligibility, right, which is always a plus. Also, I feel like I can't ever get good middle infielders for whatever reason on my team. So I'm always on the lookout for those guys. But people that come up and start fast, like I said, if you're thinking of the fantasy season, so now we're, I guess, a month in. If you break that down per week and you're just trying to win that week, these are the types of people that could get you a win during the week. If, let's say, it's three good weeks, that's it. He gets sent down or struggles. If you get on top of these people and have a couple of roster spots flexibility, this is someone you could add that, to make a difference. I'd say long term, I wouldn't think he's going to be a star, but he's had a great start.
Well, and if you want to try to get in on the heater, you might be too late, or you might be able to do it now. He's been playing pretty consistently over the last, I don't know, week or so.
Knocking out
the is,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he had a – so I'm just going to go back to when he really started hitting. That was April 19th. He went 3-for-5, and then he got one hit the following night, one hit the following night, two games – well, one game really where he went hitless, and then he pinch hit in another game where he didn't get a hit. And then it was one hit and two hits, well, yesterday in terms of when we're recording this podcast, which would be Sunday. So he's starting to hit, and that Sunday game that I talked about is when he hit his first major league home run. So if you want to try to get in on that hot streak before it ends, if you think it's going to end, which, I mean, look, I'll be as honest as I can. I like Wenciel Perez a lot. Good glove. I don't know that I trust the bat to continue on. So if you want to hop in, now might be the time, because it might not come back around. Who knows? Maybe he's made these changes and he's a great, great hitter. We've seen that before. I mean, Parker Meadows hasn't been hitting great this year, but he made a huge jump at one point. Kerry Carpenter was a 20th round draft pick and made a massive jump. And now, you know, Kerry Carpenter's Kerry Carpenter. And this is just for Detroit. So,
yeah,
there is a history of these guys just kind of popping up sometimes. And if that's true with Wenciel, they might have some. And that would be awesome, because he can play just about anywhere on the field.
Yeah. And once he plays more, and you could plug him in on any number of spots. Maybe he's a super utility guy that you'd want to have on your team just to plug in when other people have off days.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's jump back into another player. And it's somebody we've talked about before, because I blew everyone's mind with my wonderful fun fact about him. And I don't think we're supposed to be able to talk about him again, because I already burned my fun fact, but
that was really fun.
Yeah, it was super fun. And it is Pete Crow Armstrong. If you didn't hear my fun fact, Pete Crow Armstrong's real life mom played the mom in the movie Little Big League. Yeah, that movie.
Yes. So yeah, I double checked it afterwards, and I verified it was Little Big League, not Rookie of the Year, Angels in the Outfield.
Yeah, no, it was Little Big League for sure. So there's my fun fact for our new listeners. Feel free to blow people's minds with that. It works usually. But it turns out Pete Crow Armstrong has more than just an actor mother. Pete Crow Armstrong has a lot of baseball ability. And he is going to be involved in our fantasy French press. My gosh, I am never going to be able to say that. Fantasy French press. And he had a two-run home run recently, Nate.
He did. And I think this is he's probably, in my head, I see him as maybe one rung below the top stud prospects we've talked about, such as Jackson Holliday, Wyatt Langford, etc. He's right there. Maybe not quite there, but I think he's someone we've been excited about. And I'm not a Cubs fan, but just in baseball, he seems like someone who's going to have an impact, someone who had a chance to play for the Cubs with Morel, you know, as the starting center fielder. Speaking of streaky, he can be a very streaky hitter. So it seemed not long before PCA was going to make an impact. And now first hit and first career home run all in the same game. And so it actually was a 2-run blast, put the Cubs ahead. So that's a lot of fun to get that out of the way. And maybe now he gets locked in.
And especially because Pete Crow Armstrong got 14 at bats last year. I mean, he played in 13 games, not get a single hit, right? Yeah, he hit zero. So this was his first hit and home run, but he got 14 at bats last year. He struck out 7 times, which is half. I don't know if we talked about another prospect who struck out half of the time in their first go round at the major league, at the major league level. But PCA, I mean, he walked 3 times, struck out 7 in those 14 at bats last year. This year, he's already up to 14 at bats, and he has struck out 3 times, and he has 5 hits already, including that home run, 4 RBI. So things are going a little bit better for him this go round. You love to see it. I'm a huge PCA fan. I think he is a high, high level prospect. Yes. I don't know. He's one of those guys though. I don't know if you're really going to feel the full effect of what PCA's baseball talent is on your fantasy roster, because he is a phenomenal defender.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is his calling card, is his glove. And those guys obviously aren't going to have as high a value in the fantasy world as they do in the real world.
Gold gloves are not a category.
Right. And he can play a heck of an outfield no matter where you put him. Should be center field, I think. He's a great defensive center fielder. So the question is, how much is he going to hit, and how much do you like his power? I think the hit tool, everybody agrees, is at least better than average at this point. The question is, how much power is he going to have? And that's where you have to decide how much you like PCA in terms of fantasy. Do you believe in the power, Nate?
Well, that's a good point. I don't think, I'll put it this way. I think he could be middle of the road power, but it's not going to be 30 to 40 home runs. I think maybe he's more in that 15 to 20 home run range, although he has some speed also. So you might get the steals, right? And that's helpful. But yeah, the defense, that doesn't really help us out in fantasy, but it makes him a great baseball player.
Well, if anybody's wondering if I believe in PCA or not, in one of my leagues, it's a free league, I traded for Pete Crow Armstrong right before the beginning of the season. And I traded with, for those of you who know Prospects Live, with Card King, Mr. Joe Lowry. And I traded Kyle Harrison for Pete Crow Armstrong. Just 1-1.
Straight up. Yep.
Straight up. That was a position of strength for me, was pitching. And I also made another trade about, I don't know, 20 minutes later, where I got Andrew Painter. So, you know, all things considered, I don't think I am missing Kyle Harrison a whole lot, especially because I had Jared Jones waiting in the wings. But that's how much I believe him, because I love Kyle Harrison. Don't get me wrong. I think he's going to be a great fantasy pitcher. And I sent him off so I could get Pete Crow Armstrong, or so I could roster him or have a share of Pete Crow Armstrong, rather. So I believe in him. I think I like what he can provide from a fantasy standpoint. Whether he's going to be that superstar, probably not. But I think he'll be a really, really good fantasy player. It's just, he might be really good in real life just because he can play defense so well.
Right. Yeah. Maybe like someone who's a real life all-star in the fantasy world, he's a solid contributor.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that, especially if, he can use some of that plus running ability to steal some bases. Mm-hmm. And that's, if he adds that into what could be 15, 20 home runs, then you have a solid, reliable player that you want to plug into your lineup all the time, because he's going to help you out in a few different categories. But again, when you're talking about like those top tier guys, if you're talking real life, I think you could put Pete Crow Armstrong in that conversation. But in fantasy, I agree with you, where he kind of has to be that lower tier. And that's just because his best tool and his best strength in the game of baseball is something that isn't quantified for fantasy, at least right now, probably ever, but at least right now, not a whole lot of leagues take into account what a player can do defensively. And that's, I guess, kind of where you lose some value in PCA from real life to fantasy, which, again, that happens sometimes. I mean, you mentioned Christopher Morel. You could get all of your makeup stats there if you choose him on the right week.
Yeah,
he's an electric player, but oh my gosh, it could be real bad or real good for you. I actually brought him up on the Fantasy Feud podcast. Again, thank you, Sarah, for having me on that. But we were talking about Randy Rosarena's slow start and how he can just catch fire and just start mashing all over the place. And I mean, that's kind of Christopher Morel too, if you really think about it.
That's a good comparison. Yeah, that's another guy. It's like in the basketball, you have a streaky shooter or a hot shooter off the bench, and sometimes they're on, sometimes they're not, and you just have to try to ride those waves.
Yeah, I mean, Rosarena is the poster child for a flat bat path. Like, he swings super flat, so he's really good at hitting those elevated fastballs, but sometimes I feel like he just doesn't get them for a while, and it hurts his stats. And I'm sure there are other reasons, but I know his swing is really good at one thing, and that is those elevated fastballs. Either way, Nate, right now it's time for us to take another time out here on Coffee Talk. So make sure to stick around. We are going to be going over some prospects on the other end of this. And you don't want to miss that, because prospects are always fun coming from the prospect guy. We got more coming up on Coffee Talk, where we're always ready for that next cup of coffee. And of course, Coffee Talk is a part of the Pitcher List Podcast Network. And welcome back to Coffee Talk, as a part of the Pitcher List Podcast Network. My name is Trevor Huth, and the other man saying the smart things, that's Nate Kosher. Nate, we've been having some great conversations, and it's time to jump into prospects. Are you excited?
I am excited, and thank you for the compliment. I'll try to keep saying smart things.
One of us has to, and it's probably not going to be me, so I'm glad we got you here to do it. So we left off on number 60 on MLB Pipeline's top 100. And Nate, we might fly through a few here because we're getting to the point where not all these guys are going to be super, super helpful. So Edwin Arroyo, shortstop with the Reds, he is in Double A right now. MLB Pipeline projects him 2026. Good prospect. We're going to skip over him. I'm going to do the same with Jacob Wilson at 61. Again, in Double A right now, projected 2025. We could jump in with a couple of pitchers back-to-back, both of whom have seen major league time. Unless I'm wrong about that, then you can tell me I'm wrong. Connor Phillips and A.J. Smith-Shawver. They are back-to-back at 62 and 63. I believe they both pitched in the majors before, so they're guys that we've seen.
Yep, exactly. I know – so I would say I know more about Smith-Shawver, A.J. Smith-Shawver. That's hard to say, too, for the Braves. So last year, I know he debuted and did all right. I think I might have picked him up, actually, in briefly in one of my leagues. An ERA of 4.0 – he made six appearances, five starts, 4.26 ERA in 25.1 innings, a 1.10 whip. So I think he's one of the Braves' still top pitching prospects. Right now, he's down in AAA. I believe he started the season in AAA, even though he played last year, but he's doing well. So out of all these people that we've talked about recently, he's probably one of the ones I'd be most excited about for this season. You know, in the last few episodes, we've been doing 10 at a time, 30, 40, 50. As we get closer to 100, less and less. But here's a guy who has experience and I think could have an impact this year.
Yeah, for sure. And with Phillips, I think his first go round in the major leagues is kind of what you expect from him, or what his MO is. He struck out a lot of guys, he walked a lot of guys. And that's kind of him. He's got a breaking ball that, I mean, it's one of those where you describe it like it needs a turn signal. It could probably get arrested for not using a turn signal. It is sharp. It is amazing. It's a lot of fun. But he just doesn't quite have that command. He struck out 26 and walked 13 in 20 innings last year. So he's back in AAA this year. And that is, you know.
Needs the refinement, but the skill is there, no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, he's thrown 20 innings in AAA, 17 strikeouts, 16 walks. So clearly there's something that needs to take a step forward. He has nasty stuff. Personally, I would almost expect him to go the route of another former Red who throws really hard with nasty stuff. And that is Joe Boyle. I know Joe Boyle is kind of kicking around the back end of the of the rotation for the Athletics right now. Both of them could make really, really high-end relievers. And I think that's more where I see Phillips heading. I could be completely wrong about that. Joe Boyle's obviously in a rotation right now, so we'll have to see how the Reds handle Phillips. Moving along down the list, Sebastian Walcott at 64. He's in high A. He's 18 years old. He is so much fun. If you're in a dynasty league and you can find a way to trade for him, do that. 65, a guy I love. Probably not going to help us out this year. It's going to be very hard for me not to stop here. That's Yankiel Fernandez with the Rockies. Just love his swing. I'm a big fan personally. I have him and I'm hanging on tight to the, you know, where I have him on those teams. Again, we're just going to keep flying through. We're already to 66. James Triantos still.
Sorry. Could I just jump back to Fernandez just for a second? I was reading his season. In 2022, full season debut with in high A, double A, he had 109 RBI and an OPS of 847. So that's a serious hitter. Those are some serious numbers. And if he's going to Colorado, remember him.
Yeah, so he is it's big frame, physical swing. Like if look up his swing, honestly, just search his name on social media, watch a video of his swing. It's a lot of fun, and you're going to be, the size will blow you away too. He is listed at 6'2", 198, and I am going to take the over on that completely.
Yeah.
So he's a lot of fun. I mean, I'm very excited about him. I just don't know if he helps you this year. So 66, James Triantos, 67, Tommy Troy, Dalton Rushing at 68, Justin Crawford, 69. See how quickly we're moving through. Drew Jones.
Yeah, we've talked about him.
We have. I mean, yeah, I'm just going to be honest. I don't want to be anywhere near Drew Jones on any of my dynasty teams. I know we're mostly redraft. The swing is just kind of a mess right now.
Yeah, I agree. His stock going down. Obviously, another guy with a famous dad who is awesome at baseball, but seems like the excitement has fizzled a bit.
It has. So, Gabriel Gonzalez for the Twins comes in at 71. Nick Frasso at 72. We would have been talking about him. He's hurt. So that leaves us with the next guy at 73. We're actually going to stop. Are you ready? Jordan Beck with the Colorado Rockies, who on the day we recorded this podcast was called up by the Rockies. So he's actually in the major leagues right now.
Yeah. Filling in for Nolan Jones, I believe. And so going to make his debut soon. Rockies, once again, that's always a positive when someone's hitting at Coors Field. So last season, let's see here. Oh, no, this season he's the number four prospect in the Rockies system, and it was a first-rounder in 2022. So that's exciting. I mean, he's a toolsy guy.
Has five home runs already this year in AAA. He's hitting .307 with five home runs already this year in AAA.
Another big frame.
So he's hitting the cover off the ball right now.
Yeah, I mean, this could be an early keep your eye on him guy, maybe. We'll see what Beck does. But
well, I mean, if I'm in a redraft league, and I do gravitate towards prospects, I know this. I'm picking him up. I'm taking a chance. Here's why. One, the Rockies lineup is not good. I mean, if you are going to be – if the last time you looked at Nick's loose offensive rankings. But Colorado in Colorado is like middle of the road.
Oh, I did see that. Yeah, with the different color shades.
Yeah, that's nuts because they play at Coors Field when they're at home. That's nuts. So there's opportunity for Jordan Beck to stay for one. For two, you're talking about a guy with plus power playing in Coors Field. that is a lot of upside to carry. If he hits enough, that's the thing. Where is his hit tool at? And long-term, he might not even have an average hit tool. He might get to average, who knows. But if he can hit enough with plus power in the humidifier that is Coors Field, that is something that you're going to want. Even if maybe his average isn't the highest, especially if you're in an OBP league, I would take a chance on his plus power and Coors Field together. I think that is a beautiful marriage, and I would go get him right now if you can.
Well, that's
just my two cents.
No, that's good. That's a good endorsement. And so let's see how he does. Could carve out a role. And I mean, like you said, it's Coors Field and he can hit home runs. So that's usually a good equation.
Yeah. So I think we got a few more here. We're going to make it all the way up to 80. Anthony Solometto, Carson Wisenhunt. A pair of lefties back-to-back at 74 and 75. One of them is in AAA. That's Carson Wisenhunt. And the other is Anthony Solometto in AA, both of whom are thought to by MLB Pipeline to help you this year. Their ETA is 2024. So do you have a liking to either one of these guys?
Well, I will say, if we're just looking at these two, what the Pirates have done so far with Skeens doesn't give me a lot of confidence that Solometto will rise to the majors this year. Maybe. I was going to say maybe it's more likely we see Wisenhunt with the Giants, although the Giants, Blake Snell's been bad, but I think some of the other rotation pieces have been better than expected. I can't think of his name. The guy that went from the Cardinals, he was a reliever, now he's a starter for the Giants.
Jordan Hicks.
Yeah. Thank you. I think he's had some nice starts. So maybe they don't need Wisenhunt either. But both of these guys are lefties, which is interesting. I think if you're looking at the two of them for this year, like I said, I guess I would go with the Giants just because of what's gone on with the Pirates. It's just a gut feeling. I don't know if I'm picking up either of them, I guess I should say, but if I were to guess, I guess Wisenhunt. That's my two cents.
I think Blake Snell is even out because Dalton Jeffries is in his rotation spot, expected to get the next start or two for the Giants, you're right, in that rotation spot. So, you know, against Boston and Philly, I wouldn't pick up Dalton Jeffries. He doesn't throw very hard. I think they're going to take pretty good advantage of that. I like Wisenhunt a lot, and I have since his days at East Carolina. I know he was in a little bit of hot water, there was a weird thing at the end of his East Carolina stint where he didn't play for that year.
Okay.
But he's got a beautiful, beautiful changeup that is at least plus, if not better. And he's been a lot of fun to watch pitch. It's just a matter of where he's going to fit in. And I think there's definitely openings in that rotation. So one, if they want to go easy on Jordan Hicks, who has a history of injury and has been a reliever, as you mentioned. Yeah. So they might slow him down at some point. Right now it's Dalton Jeffries. If Blake Snell's out for a while, they may give Wisenhunt a shot. If he, remains bad, they might need to figure something else out. The thing is, decisions are going to have to happen. I mean, you have Keaton Wynn up as well. You're probably not going to remove Logan Webb. You're probably not going to remove Kyle Harrison.
No. Okay?
Keaton Wynn has been pretty good. He's also a guy who you could push to the bullpen if you really wanted to, because he throws upper 90s, if not touching triple digits. So that's a guy you could maybe try in the bullpen if you want to give Wisenhunt a shot. There are a lot of options with Wisenhunt, and like you mentioned with Solometto, you're going to see Skeens first, at least. So you're still waiting until after you get Skeens, and then maybe you get Solometto. And even then, they're going to want Solometto to have AAA time. So if it works out where whenever they decide to pull Skeens up, that they just pull Solometto up to AAA, that would be a good sign that he might be coming. Also, just in case anybody didn't hear, Ty Madden was promoted from AA to AAA in the Tigers organization today. that's something to watch out to. Time Madden might be able to, if you're a Time Madden guy. I'm not, but that's talk for another time. I agree with you where Wisenhunt probably is a little bit better than Solometo. Spencer Jones, love Spencer Jones. In Double A right now, projected 2025, but big power bat, also a very large frame. He's 6'6", 235. Last guy we're going to talk about. So he's at 77. So just to finish it up, 78 is Roderick Arias from the Yankees. 79 is Colt Emerson from the Mariners.
Both at 70, young.
Both are very young. They're both in A-ball.
Yep.
At 77 is a guy who was traded from the Yankees to the Padres. And then from the Padres to the White Sox, and that was just this last offseason. Drew Thorpe, he's in Double A right now, but I imagine we'll see him at some point. I have some Drew Thorpe in some of my dynasty leagues, but this is a redraft podcast. So are you interested in Drew Thorpe, Nate?
I do like Drew Thorpe quite a bit. Once again, we're talking about the teams and what they look like this year. The White Sox appear to be on a historically bad pace. So if they just turn the page to next season, I think Thorpe could get a chance. I like him a lot. I know he had some crazy numbers last year, crazy strikeout numbers, that is, and he was part of that that trade package for Dylan Cease. So I would think they already promoted Garrett Crochet, and he started out well. We talked about him. I would think Drew Thorpe is also going to have a chance. And I would say yes. It is someone I'd take a look at for this season.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you. I mean, you mentioned there are some very interesting names or arms rather in this White Sox system. I think they've done a really good job revamping it a little bit. But, you know, they had a guy like Prelander Barreau, and Barreau is going to be working out of the bullpen. And you add a few other guys. Nick Nastrini has already seen some time this year. They have Jared Schuster, who they can call up. Both of them are on the 40-man. We just saw Jonathan Cannon, who's 23 years old. He just got optioned back down, but he, again, is on the 40-man. So the question becomes, how long can they wait until they have to clear a spot for him? They also have Jairo Iriarte in Double A, who's on the 40-man, and they have Jake Eater, who is on the 40-man and is in Double A. So at what point do they have somebody they can make a move to? I don't doubt that they would. And I think it's possible that they will at some point, but there's a lot more attractive options, which would lead me to believe they're going to want to exhaust the 40-man guys before having to get somebody potentially out of their organization.
True.
And so it's going to have to be one where you watch Drew Thorpe, and if he is lights out, then yeah, he might be the next guy up. But if he's just kind of middle of the road, they might just push him along, and we might not see him till next year.
There's another guy, Kai Bush. I think we may have mentioned
him. He's in Double A too. He's not on the 40-man.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
And so, they've done a good job getting some new arms in. They also got another arm who is not, I believe he is in high A, and that's Juan Carella. They got him from the Yankees. Big fan of Juan Carella as well. And of course, don't forget they have Noah Schultz. They have Peyton Pallett, if you're a Peyton Pallett guy. So they have some interesting arms. It's just a matter of who's going to step up and who they're willing to make room for sooner than later.
Yeah. How are these dominoes going to fall? I guess you're right. There's quite a few scenarios there.
And as of right now, they are about to give Mike Clevinger another shot. Whew. Yeah.
Wow. I will say, I saw they signed Tommy Pham, and then I think they won two or three straight games, and Tommy Pham, I saw something about, he's going to scare the White Sox into an undefeated rest of season. He's an intense competitor, but they did win.
I mean, hey, if you win, you win. So some interesting storylines, I think, to follow over in Chicago. I mean, it's got to be a lost season, right?
Yeah, I think already. Yeah.
Here's the other thing. I was looking this up when I was doing the expected starters for this past week even. And if you look at just on FanGraphs, going to team stats, and I'm literally telling you what I'm actively doing as I'm talking. Go to team stats and you look, you make it to starting pitching only, and you look at the group. It's ridiculous how low the White Sox are compared to everybody, it seems like, in just in so many categories. The Rockies are much worse, and I think I was thinking of the Rockies. The Rockies have a 6.47 K per nine, and this is just starters, a 6.67 ERA, and have produced a 0.1 whip through 28 games. Or a war, I mean, not whip, a 0.1 war.
Okay,
and
yeah.
War through 28 games. That is I mean, that's just not good. And then the White Sox are right below them in terms of ERA. They have the White Sox starters have a 5.64 ERA. They've produced a one war. And they have, I mean, they're at least striking out 8.43 per nine. But still, it's not going great. They have the fourth lowest war among starters. The only people below them are Colorado, obviously. And then, surprisingly, the Padres and the Brewers in terms of just your rotation creating war.
And I'm just, I also took a glance here at the hitting. They're last in OBP, last in OBS, and last in runs, 29th in average, 29th in home runs. So that's almost last in all hitting categories, terrible in pitching categories. Yeah, looking to be a long season there for the Southsiders.
Yeah, and, you know, they play in the AL Central, so you'd think there's a chance they're not in last place, but they are very far in last place. They are 6-22. The next closest team is 14-13, and that's the Twins.
Yeah, I think, and we've talked about before, Central is not, like, going to set the world on fire, but they're not even going to have a chance this year.
Four of the five teams are over 500 right now, so let's stop the count. This is the best division in baseball.
As of April 29th.
Yeah, hey, what more games do we need to play? You know what I mean?
We'll take it.
All right, Nate, I think that just about wraps up this edition of Coffee Talk, where, of course, we are always ready for that next cup of coffee. I can tell you, I'm ready for the next cup of coffee for, like, Jackson Holliday and Jordan Walker, and hopefully those cups of coffee are a little bit longer like the rest of their career. That would be awesome. But we're always ready for that next cup of coffee. We're here to talk about it. We appreciate you listening, as always. And for Nate Kosher, my name is Trevor Huth, and you've been listening to Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network.